a really excellent participation rate for a town as small as Laytonville. And we asked people to share with us what their vision was for Laytonville. You know, we said if you were to walk away and come back 20 years from now and see something that you were really proud of, what would you want to see? And people said, we want to see sidewalks and streetlights. We want to see landscaping, seating areas. There's nowhere to sit in Laytonville. We want to see more public art. Laytonville's going to be a model green community. It's going to be sustainable and welcoming. There will be trails and shops, and everybody will have jobs and affordable housing. And there's just some really beautiful visions emerged. And as we moved on into establishing what the community priorities were, I was actually blown away with what the number one community priority was. So out of 200 people attending this opening night event, 50 of those people voted for creating and establishing a center of the village. Basically, what is our common area? What is our plaza? What is our gathering place in Laytonville? And what was so striking to me about that is, you know, in Laytonville, you've got all kinds of people who are so proud of their rural and agricultural heritage. At least half of the population lives well outside of town. And people are fiercely independent, much like they are in Humboldt County. And yet, the number one community priority was creating our center of town, creating our community gathering space. And what we started learning through this whole process is that most of us live farther out and live a very, very rural existence. When we do come to town, we want to park our cars. We want to walk around, greet our neighbors. For us right now, the post office is the center of town. That's where we run into our friends and neighbors. We want to be able to safely cross the highway and go shopping at the grocery store. We want to be able to safely cross the highway and pick up burritos at the burrito stand. We want to be able to push our kids down the street in strollers without wondering if the next big rig is going to, you know, crash into a building downtown Laytonville. It's still a dangerous place. But again, really astonished that in such a very rural community, establishing and further identifying our town center and making it more livable and walkable was the number one thing that people were looking for.
Yeah, that is really interesting. There's definitely been some progress made there. I know there's some brick crosswalks that cross the 101 there. And, you know, it's a big problem when you have a town where US 101 goes through the center of town. And a lot of people probably now, they see those crosswalks and they realize, oh, this is a place where people are going to be crossing the street. This just isn't a place to hurry up and put the pedal to the metal and get through. Is that project, is that in process, or what other parts of that project have been completed now other than the crosswalks?
It was actually several projects all rolled into one. I think from the public's perspective, they probably saw it as one big project, but it was the curve realignment that happened on the north end of town. And because we had been involved in getting so much good community input and building a lot of political support for this cause, Caltrans was actually able to secure another $300,000 in transportation enhancement funds, T funds. And those funds are unique because they're not allowed to be used on the roadway. They're only for enhancements. And so for Laytonville, what that meant is they basically said, you've got $300,000. What do you want it spent on? And so that's where our community input really came in handy. And so we were able to say, we need higher visibility crosswalks. You know, we've had too many people die walking across highway in Laytonville. We've had too many people injured. It's not acceptable to have any more of this. We need better lighting. And when we started talking about lighting, of course, there was a lot of concern about light pollution. And so we specified to Caltrans that we were looking for International Dark Sky Association approved lighting. And we got it. They listened to us and gave us our choice of approved lighting to select from. We told them that it was really important to us to have striped bike lanes, not just 5 feet of unmarked pavement on either side of the highway. We wanted it striped, and we wanted bike stencils on it so that everybody knew this is for bikes, this isn't for cars. And at the same time, the president of our rodeo association said, well, if we're doing all this stuff for people and bicycles, we better do something for the horses. How about some hitching posts? And I remember that one meeting very well because we had, I think, five or six people from Caltrans and about a dozen community representatives there, and all the Caltrans people wound up in hysterics. And when they looked up and saw that we were all serious, they said, well, let's see what we can do. And a couple weeks later, all of the business owners up and down the 101 corridor received a letter from Caltrans saying, if you're interested in having a bike rack or a hitching post in front of your business or street trees, because for a while they were actually considering not putting in any street trees. It was just going to be strictly hardscape. If you're interested in any of those things, let us know and we'll install them on your property. And so all of those things were installed through that enhancement, that through the T funding. And I think that's most of what people notice when they drive through Laytonville, is that we've got street trees, we've got better lighting, and we have what they call pedestrian facilities to make it just a little easier to walk and bike and take horses through town now.
Yeah, well, seeing as I used to live there, I certainly have noticed. So let's talk a little bit more about the Central Park Plaza idea, because I know in Garberville, people have been working on a town square there, and in McKinleyville, where I live, it's been planned for many years, but there doesn't seem to be any movement on it currently. How will Laytonville go about getting a town square?
Well, this is part of our long-term vision. I mean, we're talking 20 or 25 years out. Because basically what we're going to have to do is transition the land uses there. And when we look at what the big, huge block is right now in downtown Laytonville, when I say block, I mean the actual, you know, square town block. It's where the grade school is. It is very near to where the post office is. There's housing that surrounds it. The health center surrounds it. It's basically the core of our, quote-unquote, downtown area right now is where this town center will develop. And we were pretty timid going about it, saying this is the center of town, but how are we going to transition from where we are now to where we want to get? And it was actually the president of the school board who said, you know, we need to be thinking really far ahead, and our school buildings are not going to last forever. In another 20 years, these are going to be at the end of their life cycle, and we should look at transitioning that toward affordable housing for school teachers and for families of students who attend the schools. And the school district in Laytonville is the largest landowner in the downtown area, and so they are actually in a position to eventually move toward that. And because we don't have any central wastewater treatment, everybody's on individual septic, much like a lot of the rural communities on the North Coast, we also need to provide for all of the leach fields for that development. So we looked at what a clustered housing scenario would look like right in the middle of town, where everybody would still have individual homes, but they would be in a small neighborhood configuration. And then shared leach lines would go out into basically a large community plaza or community square, and those are compatible uses. So there could be a combination of housing, small community scale, a shop front. People were very interested in having a bakery and a few more small retail establishments for buying things like shoes and just basic clothing items, and then provide for all the wastewater treatment needs as well. So we came up with a real basic design theme that we can work towards. And again, this is a long-range plan. This is probably 20 years or more from now, but that's where that create a vision principle comes in first. Now at least we know what we're working toward. And I think it's going to start with probably moving our farmers market to a new location and just going step by step. So right now our farmers market is in front of the Good Food Store, right on Highway 101. We're outgrowing that location and would like to move to a location where we can accommodate more vendors. And I think probably many of the listeners are familiar with just what a wonderful community feeling is generated at the farmers market, aside from the fresh local produce that is sold and that consumers get to enjoy and eat. And it just creates a lot of good community health that way, financially and health in our bodies as well.
Well, it sounds like a great vision, and that's really what planning is all about, is not just haphazardly doing projects here and there with a two-year time scale, but coming up with a long-term vision that is what people want to see. So that is really exciting. And I know that the Local Government Commission has a wealth of information. Can you let the listeners know how they can find out more?
Sure. I want to encourage everybody to visit our website, and that's www.lgc.org, as in local government commission, lgc.org. Tons of free resources on everything from how communities can begin to prepare for climate change to watershed planning and water resource management and how to incorporate that into policies and plans. We're doing a lot of really great work on energy efficiency right now, as well as the healthy communities work that I mentioned earlier and the land use work as well.
Great. Well, thanks for all your good work, and thanks a lot for being with us today.
You're welcome so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
This has been the EcoNews Report. My name is Jennifer Kalt, and I've been your host for the past half hour. My guest today has been Allison Purnell of the Local Government Commission, a nonprofit organization that works to build livable communities. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU for the EcoNews Report.
Hello. We are robots sent from outer space to replace the Devil Mix 3.
We are androids and we are strong.
101.1. Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It's all my circuits pick up.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned for another exciting, if typical, show. Lots of street interviews, some international and national chatter, and perhaps your phone calls. That also happens. So I'll go away, stay with me, and I will stay with you.
All the answers come as quickly as they leave. There's just something not quite right here. And I've tried the blue pill and I've had my share of the red. But nothing can ease this itch at the back of my head. Oh, what a clever trick to pull the wool over our eyes. Tell us to wait patiently until we're dead to get the better life. Well, I guess they meant it when cause it's all the same things I see around me, waiting to wake up to find out it's not what it's all supposed to be about. So talk about it, never stop questioning that funny feeling all around. Thank you. keep on sitting here watching the days go by. Turn on the TV and get a life for a little while, or escape it all to find the truth hurts, but it's still better than living a lie. So talk about it.
That was Sarah Marlowe, The Right Question, from her album, Times Like These. And it is times like these when things get tough, not only for poor and homeless people on the streets, but even for all you well-endowed or, you know, struggling radio listeners. Informativa Pacifica, Uncle Dennis has just advised me, didn't come on the air at 5:30, not because we failed to put it up, because it didn't reach us. And the second bit of bad news is that Free Speech Radio News, which I was actually reading about earlier today in on East Bay Indie Media, it's apparently regularly covered by the Pacifica Foundation, is about to go bankrupt and off the air on December 17th unless there's an infusion of money. Part of the problem is that the KPFA staff has been spending its money on its own programs instead of paying back what it owes the Pacifica Foundation, so the Pacifica Foundation can pay back what it owes to Free Speech Radio News, according to at least what I'm reading on indiebay.org/East Bay. Now, I'm not a regular listener to Free Speech Radio News, but I have heard it, and there are probably plenty of regular listeners who are going to be mighty disappointed. I think Democracy Now! Is also going to be impacted. Not so much if Free Speech Radio News goes down on December 17th, but I think KPFA is likely to go down, too. There's really all kinds of internal factional fighting going on. It's hard to figure out exactly what's happening, but I've generally come up with the conclusion that an entrenched staff is demanding that it maintain its privileged position, and that the money is going into that particular objective to the detriment of the station and the Pacifica Foundation as a whole. Again, I haven't researched the budget line by line, and I'm relying to some extent on what is and isn't said by both sides, or there's actually more than two sides on this issue, and I played a bit about the KPFA controversy. You can read a lot more about it on East Bay Indie Media, which is at www.indiebay.org/East Bay. And again, if you're interested, go to the Free Speech Radio News website and donate money if you want to hear Free Speech Radio News after December 17th. That's, a week and a half away? Yep. Free Speech Radio News, of course, is normally carried by us 5 to 5:30 Monday through Friday, right before Informativo Pacifica. Now, how about some Santa Cruz radio news, or let's just say some Santa Cruz radio babble. I go about with my little tape recorder recording this and that. Sometimes I come up with some interesting chunks of info, others not so interesting, but I try to cover a broad swath. Actually, it turns out to be rather narrow. I spend a lot of time on Pacific Avenue, and sometimes I spend, often my informants are repeat informants who I ask what's going on downtown, what's going on the levee, what's going on at the homeless service center, what's going on with the police treatment of poor people around the town, and I get the answers that I get, and you get to hear some of them here on Free Radio. So, let's begin with some of that. There is a protest demonstration of some size going on in Fresno, California tonight, for those of you who are interested. And I'm going to be talking about that and hopefully getting a call from Fresno activist Mike Rhodes later in the show. I will be talking about that more. It is kind of an illustrative struggle. You have the poverty pimps and the bureaucratic bullshitters talking in those towns about how they have a 10-year plan to end homelessness, but of course they aren't. It's simply a way of getting funding from the federal government and from other sources and making like they're doing something when they're not. And this protest is actually only concerned with a very minor thing, or at least it seeks a very small objective, which is there are encampments in Fresno. Homeless people have themselves set up their sleeping bags and their tents and their ramshackle shacks and gather their meager possessions together under the underpasses. And they've had encampments for 3 or 4 years that have continued in Fresno, perhaps partially because they won a large lawsuit against the federal government against the city government in a federal court, because the authorities there were doing what the Parks and Rec czar and the police department does here, which is seize homeless property, and particularly Parks and Rec. John Wallace, unless he's changed his tune and changed his practice, which I'm not aware that he has, he destroys it. He doesn't hold it as evidence. He doesn't tag it and let you know it's available. He destroys it, and he acknowledges that. He makes no bones about it. We can't afford to store it. We just go through and destroy homeless survival gear, homeless property, homeless medications, homeless ID. That's just how it goes. He'll give a warning to a camp, or at least his labor-ready crews will go through the Poganip and the levee. And sometimes they won't give a warning. Sometimes it'll just be public works clearing things out. I got an anguished and angry report yesterday from Lido and Miguel de Leon of his stuff and that of his friends being just destroyed and cleared away in trucks, which he didn't see, but which he believes happened because of the disposition of his campsite when he returned. Fresno is not allowed to do that anymore because of the federal lawsuit, and that may have also protected the encampments. And what the encampments are looking for are dumpsters, porta-potties, minimal sanitation, which is really, considering there are, I don't know how many hundreds of vacant buildings in the huge city of Fresno, over 1 million people live there. There are vacant buildings in Santa Cruz that are unused, but because of the system we live in, those are reserved, you know, for private property owners or for government bureaucrats who decide how that space should be used. People freeze, people suffer, people are exposed to the elements. People get sick and die because they don't have adequate shelter. And there's lots of jabber about it, and some token efforts, like the Homeless Service Center. Token meaning that the money that's being spent on the Homeless Service Center over the last decade could have been spent to actually provide emergency shelter for every homeless person who needs it in Santa Cruz on a temporary basis, but it hasn't. Instead, we have crap about caseworkers and drug abuse programs and halfway house stuff and social workers, all kinds of middle class jobs that have nothing to do with the real needs of poor people. You know, we'll teach you how to write your checks again. We'll teach you the real problem with the homeless, they say, is that they're drug abused, or they're crazy, or they're alcoholics, you know, or they're lazy. Not that there's, and has been for 3 decades, a meaningful, horrendous housing shortage, and that we're in the middle of a skydiving economy that is dropping like a rock. Anyway, this protest tomorrow is happening in Fresno, and there are activists coming from different places. I actually thought I might go, but I'm not. I'm here instead. I'm going to try to send, I'm going to give my greeting when Mike Rhodes calls in, or perhaps some representative of his calls in tonight if he does. Sandy Perry, who's with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry in San Jose, and who I 15, 20 years ago, we were all arrested together occupying buildings for the homeless that were successful. They were able they were turned into shelters and housing. In no way alleviating the problem, but it's the kind of action, I think, that needs to be taken on a much broader scope, take over abandoned housing and so forth, that really is sort of asserts what the priorities really are, what the needs really are, what the real situation really is, instead of the fantasy rules we live by. Anyway, here's Sandy Perry of San Jose, as I said, one-time colleague of mine, writes this. The time is long past when a few advocates can improve the lives of anyone. The election results in San Francisco nationally prove that. We have a system and a government that is broken. 15 million unemployed, millions of people losing their homes to foreclosure, and 50 million people without health care. The government is paralyzed when it comes to solving these problems, but has found a way to extend hundreds of billions of dollars in tax cuts to the wealthiest people in the world. We need to work toward pulling our people together by the millions and educating them on the need to build a new government and a new economy based on meeting human needs and human rights instead of corporate profit. But we can't fight for the future if we can't defend even our most minimal needs for survival and dignity today. That is why everyone should come out to City Hall today at 6 p.m., which is 15 minutes ago, in Fresno, to celebrate human rights and fight for services for the homeless. This kind of activity sows the seeds for the future, not only for our cities, but our entire country and our world. That is why a group of us are traveling from San Jose to Fresno today to be with you in solidarity with your efforts. And what Rhodes wrote was, thanks to everyone who read and to those who commented on my reply. There's actually an interesting debate going on, which if you're interested in it, you should join the Huff email list. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with. And just email me at rnorse3@hotmail.com, and I will put you on the list. Or you can give me a call, leave a message on my phone, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll also put you on the email list. If you want to email the show, you got comments, you can also do that. Again, rnorse3@hotmail.com, and you can also give a call directly, 427-3772. Rhodes writes, I think we agree that the 10-year plan to end homelessness is not a plan to end homelessness at all. The purpose of the document is to get money from the federal government, most of which will go to the same social service providers and developers who have not been ending homelessness for decades. I want to make clear that my proposal to provide the homeless with basic public services is a short-term goal that will improve the lives of homeless people who are on the streets right now. It is not an effort to end homelessness. It will just clean up the city, prevent a health hazard, make homeless people's lives a little better. We're talking about porta-potties, dumpsters, sanitation services. It will just clean up the city and save taxpayers money. The solution to homelessness is to provide the homeless with affordable and decent housing. There are plenty of unoccupied houses and buildings that could be converted to house the homeless available. The problem is that our political and economic system is not set up to meet human needs. The long-term goal needs to be safe and affordable housing for everyone. Housing is a human right. We could spend less money and end homelessness if we could change our government's priorities. That is going to take a while. In the meantime, we need to do what we can to change the city of Fresno's policy on the homeless. This is what I always say about Santa Cruz, too. Policies like passing ordinances that prevent them from asking for money, which we also have here in Santa Cruz. In fact, even worse. Privatizing the effort to end homelessness and not providing public services. A small victory for us would be if we could get the city to provide the homeless with the same basic public services that everyone else in the community takes for granted. That would be a wonderful holiday gift from the most needy to the most needy in this community. And who knows? Maybe we'll hear more from Mike later in the show. It's, again, a very interesting exchange between somebody trying to talk about the details of the so-called 10-year plan to end homelessness in Fresno, which, of course, is has nothing to do with ending homelessness. It has to do with funding some small groups of people and providing political cover for another. Anyway, calling number here is 427-3772. And I think, well, maybe I'll do an update first on the Indy Bay situation. A lot of people who follow the show, I think, regularly look up the local indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website, which is where I post a lot of stories myself. And I have done a number recently. I wrote a letter to Mayor Mike Rotkin sometime this afternoon, I think it was. Maybe it was this morning, urging him to do what Berkeley has done, which is proposing a resolution supporting, well, I would I'm looking for a resolution supporting specifically whistleblowers and WikiLeaks, specifically denouncing the persecution of Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks, or one of the co-founders of WikiLeaks, who's currently in jail in London. Bradley Manley, or Brad Manley, I think it is, who's the individual suspected of leaking hundreds of thousands of so-called secret documents exposing the corruption, hypocrisy, criminal behavior of the U.S. government and that of other governments throughout the world. And Berkeley is passing a resolution that is on Tuesday coming up for a vote, coming out of their human, I think it's their Human Rights Commission. I may have the name wrong. They actually have city commissions that actually do consider these items that often come from the community, not just from a special interest group supporting Hillary Bryant or the police department or Take Back Santa Cruz, but groups. Frankly, groups that I'd be more sympathetic with. And I'd like to see us do something similar. Rotkin is going to be going out as mayor. He will, you know, he's out of office as of Tuesday. But yet he could put on the agenda a resolution supporting, well, here's the letter I wrote him. Let me read it to you. You can read it online, too. Mike, Berkeley City Council, see somewhat slanted story below, is, as you probably know, considering a resolution supporting Manning, the patriot, I hope it's Manning, maybe it's Manley, I got the name right, accused of doing a Daniel Ellsberg-style massive leak of incriminating documents. Reversing the war and repression hysteria in this country needs to be one of our local priorities as well. Please introduce a resolution urging an end. As mayor and elder parliamentarian, you are in a particularly strong position to do so. It would also be timely to present a resolution supporting Julian Assange, considering the unprecedented worldwide attack on him. And he's, of course, the guy who's being held not even for because he's under arrest, because they want to interrogate him in Sweden regarding claims that he had unprotected sex with two women who were invited him to bed. And I know nothing about the facts of it, except that he's, according to his attorney, and this is uncontested by the government, he's agreed to, for months, to discuss this issue with the prosecutor, and they haven't, they just two or three days ago issued an arrest warrant for him. Not because they want to hold him on charges, but because they just want to interrogate him. It looks like a way of getting him, he's afraid, to Sweden, where he will be deported to the U.S. And in the U.S., if you're not a citizen, as has been said many a time, under the war criminal Obama regime, following up on the war criminal Bush regime, you have a whole system of extra-legal detention and torture facilities for those who they regard as a national security threat. And this was once, you know, regarded as some sort of, you know, weird conspiracy theory, or bizarre exaggeration. It isn't anymore. It's accepted practice. Courts have recently thrown out an attempt to sue on behalf of an American citizen, and Assange isn't even an American citizen, so he wouldn't even have those rights, an American citizen who was targeted for assassination and or capture by the CIA on a list, and he wanted to get off the list. He wanted his father, I think, sued on his behalf, or at least to find out what kind of due process goes under that, and it was thrown out of court because it violates national security. So anyway, I'm asking Rotkin to introduce an emergency resolution, and it has to be an emergency resolution since the agenda was formed yesterday and it has to be posted 72 hours before for regular agenda items. However, emergency agenda items can be done at any time up to the meeting itself. And it requires a 5-2 vote instead of a majority vote, and it requires an emergency finding. You say, well, what's the emergency? You know, how can you justify this? And I think the conditions are an emergency, and I think it's also relevant that the last time that I remember, and I'm sure there have been other times, that Rotkin introduced an emergency measure was in 2003. He wasn't even mayor at that time. He was on the city council. But Tom Noddy, the bubble performer, had been arrested for juggling downtown because he had expressed outrage that the city attorney and the city manager and I guess the city council members had essentially told one thing to the public about the rights of jugglers, which I'm not terribly hot on, by the way. I'm more interested in the rights of poor people. But, yeah, you know, jugglers, sure, why not, the rights of jugglers. It supposedly had been protected in the latest round of smack down the homeless and restrict the musicians downtown ordinances that passed in 2002 and were made worse in 2003. And the city lied about it to him, and so he was pissed. And so he went out there and he got arrested for juggling. And when he was arrested, he then started organizing a whole bunch of jugglers to come to town and make Santa Cruz a laughingstock. Well, Rotkin wasted no time. He put an emergency item on the city council agenda in the summer of 2003 because it was too late to do a regular item and passed it. Well, if juggling, the right to juggle, is such an emergency, then I don't see why the protection of journalists and the protection of whistleblowers, Manning is a whistleblower, Assange is a journalist, isn't far more important, frankly, than the juggling issue. Although I don't want to disparage juggling, and it's a First Amendment protected activity, and well, it should be. So I encourage you to take a look at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Send Rotkin an email yourself. You can do that at mrotkin@cityofsantacruz.com. mrotkin, R-O-T-K-I-N, @cityofsantacruz.com. And tell him to support, introduce an emergency resolution supporting the rights of journalists, WikiLeaks, and whistleblowers, Bradley Manning. And he can do that. But, of course, he won't. Doesn't matter, however, he should certainly be pressed to do so. You can send the letter to the entire city council, which is, I believe, citycouncil@cityofsantacruz.com. That's one word, citycouncil@cityofsantacruz.com. It looks like I'm going to have to send it out again because I added an extra Y to the word city. Always double-check your stuff. I'm a problem with that. So, this is Bathrop Spear's Broadsides. I'm Bathrop Spear, yeah, that's who I am. And you're whoever you are, and who knows? We may get together if you call in, 427-3772. But while we're waiting for that event to happen, and before I go through more of indiebay.org, although, you know, it's not really perhaps too important to do that since it's up online if you want to take a look. There's been some discussion. I put up a letter that I sent to Monica Martinez of the Homeless Services Center because she's stonewalling on questions of how can homeless people get documentation when the shelters are full so they won't be forced to go to court and address phony tickets from city police who simply want to run them out of town or acting on behalf of bigots who want to do the same. She's stonewalled for the last 3 months on this issue and continues to stonewall. So I issued a flyer, which I put out at the Human Rights Fair on Saturday, and she's yet to really respond with an email that gives me any substantive information. She was courteous enough to respond saying she had received my email, But and she also corrected a phone number that I mistakenly screwed up the numbers on. And I thanked her for that, but, you know, I want the meat. I don't just want, you know, the gristle, so to speak. Answer a few simple questions. Can anyone who wants to sign up on your waiting list for a shelter bed do so? Is this still the case now that the armory is open? Do you give a person any receipt or other indication that they have signed up for the bed? And apparently they don't. I heard that from someone else, but again, I'm looking for the official answer from her. Is there any requirement that a person check in, and if so, how frequently? And I've heard that there is a requirement that they check in every Monday, but again, Martinez is declining to make any official statements, so people don't really have any clear guides. 4, is there someone available each night to advise someone calling in whether the shelter is full? So if it's full, why would the police issue a ticket anyway? Because the new law passed by the city council unanimously and proposed by our very own city attorney, John Barisoni, states that camping ordinance does not apply if the shelter is full that night and you're on a waiting list. So it would seem to me that, well, even if you're not on a waiting list, the shelter is going to be full. Why waste police time and money? Why harass people? Why make them move in the middle of the night? Why subject them to that kind of stress and that kind of humiliation and indignity when you have no place to send them? And when it's even against the local city law. Even if you haven't got them on a waiting list, which would make it, I suppose, theoretically legal, it's illegal because you know that it's going to end up, if properly followed up in court, with a necessity defense, which will win. Although maybe not. You know, maybe we have some bizarre judges who are going to come up with some conclusions that I find very curious. And I don't know. That hasn't happened. But in the past, even the state courts have held that if there is a necessity to sleep at night, and if there's no legal place to sleep, that is the basis for a necessity defense for a homeless person. And the fifth thing that I asked Martinez that she's declined to answer is, will you refuse to provide a letter acknowledging that your shelter was full on a night someone got a ticket if they weren't on your waiting list? In other words, if your shelter was full, and this is what they used to do, if you come in with a ticket, they'd say, here, we were on the night of that ticket, yes, we were full, and here's a statement that says we were full that night. Now Martinez apparently is following a policy that won't do that unless you were on a waiting list at that time, even though the relevant point is that the shelter was full, not whether you were on a waiting list or not. Anyway, no answers to these questions, a lot of troll talk on the Internet, which I kind of ignore. And hopefully, I encourage people, as with the Rotkin letter, to email Monica Martinez and ask, what's going on with these questions? You know, why not answer them? They're pretty simple questions. Yes, no, maybe. What's the story? You know, maybe you don't agree with the policy. Maybe you'd like to see it change. Maybe you do, and, you know, we take a different point of view. But be honest about what your policy is. It's kind of like, you know, we don't even really need a wiki. Maybe we do need a WikiLeaks person inside the Homeless Service Center who simply releases documents. But it's the documents we want. It's the official statement of policy that we want, and we're not getting. So let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back.
Maybe if I
And that was another one by Sarah Marlowe, and it was called Maybe. So, you are listening to 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Free Speech Radio News will be going off the air. That's our regular 5 to 5:30 broadcast on December 17th, unless it gets some more bucks. And what you need to do is, if you're interested in having that happen, go to the Free Speech Radio News website and give them some money. Free Speech Radio News. It's pretty straightforward. If you want it, you got to support it. Kind of like WikiLeaks, you know. Although this one's just dying of strangulation, slow malnutrition rather than the kind of strangulation that Assange is subject to. So actually, maybe I should turn to a couple of things I was going to read. Well, I've been hearing myself talk for 40 minutes, and so have you. Let's listen to a few, at least a few other voices interspersing now and then. Here's some voices from the street, from street interviews. And I think we're talking sometime in the last week, but hopefully we'll find out.
What's the view from Moonstruck, Mike?
I understand the sound of silence now, that the police have made the cello player disappear, and after him, everybody else that had a musical word to say.
We are here on Pacific Avenue. It's December 2nd, 2010, and a Thursday evening. Not very cold, a little chilly perhaps. Winter is beginning. But I do notice both the absence of people sitting, even in the few legal spots
that are left. They took them and tore them all out, you know.
Well, they actually simply define them as being usable for more important commercial purposes.
Oh, well, where's that at?
Commerce, the restaurants, the lifeblood of the city.
These are restaurants here. All the city capacity, all the benches are gone. The water fountains are gone.
There are water fountains up the street.
There used to be a water fountain right there.
Now you're
it's gone.
You're pointing to the area in front of the Yoga Village Yoga. You can still do yoga at the Village Yoga.
If you pay for it.
Well, yeah. This is America, son.
There's no free water to drink anymore.
Water is paid for in most parts of the world.
I gotta wait for it to rain. I gotta lay in my back with my mouth open waiting for it to rain.
Now you're a longtime resident of
you call those bubblers, you know.
1010 Pacific?
Yeah, right.
And how long have you lived here?
Since before the building opened.
Oh, you mean you were kind of camping on the spot there?
No, I was living on a third floor while I was still working on the building. We were the first people in, you know.
I see. Now, before that, were you a Pacific Avenue resident?
No, I lived up in the valley, up in Boulder, Brookdale, actually. And then
you don't really know what happened before 2003 here, eh?
Oh, yes, I do. I was hanging around here before the Catalyst is where it is now, when it was back over to St. George.
Oh, back in 1971, 72.
71, 72, 69, 70, 71, 72.
Did you ever live in the old St. George?
No. No, I had a house up in Brookdale.
What happened to your house now that you're living
in it? I gave it to my ex-wife, and she, what she did with it, I don't know. She took the money and went to Oregon.
There you go,
and
Oregon.
Look here at 1010.
Where it's cheaper.
I'm going back to 1010 now. And
all right, well, peace be with you.
Think about the thirsty days I'm going to spend here on Pacific Mall.
At least we don't have the unreasonably.
There's no place to sit.
No more unreasonably.
Thirsty and tired.
And without the raucous music that so disturbed us in the past.
The peaceful, lilting music that soothed the heart of the savage beast.
Here. Well, thank you, Moonstruck. That was Moonstruck Mike. Yet, as if to question, challenge, and dispute my claim of a musical dearth on Pacific Avenue. Well, it's not a actual music playing, but we seem to have some folks sitting in front of Borders hanging out. Here we go. Do I hear music on Pacific Avenue?
We had great music here tonight, and the music that's going to be going down on the Pacific Avenue via the vaunted Santa Cruz street music scene is going to get better and better. We are pushing the envelope now. You're not going to believe what's going to come off of this street in just a couple of weeks, a few weeks.
We're talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
Thank you, Ricardo. We'll be listening.
And you know, I have a song for your radio station. I've got to bring it by. I just was listening to the final cuts up there, and I'll let you hear it.
Well, we'll be waiting.
Thank you.
Thanks. Same to you.
citizen complaining about this conversation.
You guys are being like talking way too loud. I'm trying to like hang out with my girlfriend.
Trying to go to sleep while he walks.
Trying to just have a peaceful conversation with my new friend Rebecca here.
Uh-huh.
And you guys are being so loud and obnoxious.
Really? Where's my hug then?
Here.
Oh.
I notice you're getting a little expressive here in the downtown area of Santa Cruz, and I'm pretty sure that's an ordinance there should be an ordinance that can't be emotionally, emotionally expressive in downtown public Santa Cruz, sir, because I'm with the grumpy crowd.
The grumpy gramps?
Grumpy gramp crowd, and I have partial city council backing.
Oh, yes.
Because some of their policies are very grumpy, bar out.
For sure. Thank you, and thank you, Grumps. I mean Grumpy Gramp.
Update tomorrow.
Thank you. We're here at the spare changing machine, but there ain't much change. It's the same old shit. No. But here's a man who's creating some art. It looks like some grass or some straw grasshoppers. Or what are these creatures?
How much do those things cost?
Yeah, are these?
Are they for sale?
You're actually making some artwork here.
They look like grasshoppers.
Yeah, just donations.
And what is your name, sir?
Deuce.
And Deuce, how long have you been creating this kind of art?
Past 6 years.
And how is Pacific Avenue as a market for this kind of art?
And they say money don't grow on trees, but it does.
I see. So are these particular trees on Pacific Avenue? Or?
Where's your girlfriend? I wrestle her instead.
Aha. And Jay here is hanging around with some younger woman. Is this a polyamorous relationship? Do I get a chance to move in here?
Where is your little one?
I don't think so.
No, she shakes her head. It's not a possibility.
Unless you shave or something.
Shave? Are you kidding?
It's not you. It's him.
It's not me. It's you. What about this guy with the red hood?
I have no idea.
Okay. Never mind. Okay.
Babbling away. Here.
No, come back.
Where is
Any reports from the street about music problems?
The only problem with music is having the motivation to play it,
right?
And forget it. Fuck the dumb shit.
You know how long he played today? From like 9 o'clock this morning, he played down here.
And how did it go?
I'm not in the union or nothing.
You had like 35 people, the drunkest of all the drunks in town, were at the park today with him, just gathered around him, singing along, just smiling with their one and two teeth. It's beautiful.
And did you get a drink out of this? Did you get any money?
I think I gave all my money away to the homeless people, and I respect them.
And so your total earnings for the day are zilch?
I made about $100,000, but I gave half of it to myself.
His friend.
And the Hare Krishna Fund.
So in other words, we're not going to get a straight answer from these two.
We're not going to get... You want to wrestle?
I could arm wrestle. I could finger wrestle you.
That's it. Me and you right now. Let's do it.
You want to wrestle?
No, you're not wrestling.
No, we're doing.
No, you're not.
Hold on.
He's too big and he's too
tall. He's
like a big old Labrador.
No, it's like liquor that has driven you to this state. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Demon rum, eh?
Demon rum. Well, beer is my friend.
Here is your friend.
Here is my friend.
We're going to leave this conversation. It's been fun, but as a teetotaler, I can't tolerate it anymore. I total a lot of tea.
I have a lot of respect for teetotalers.
Thank you.
You're no better than to wrestle a Labrador when he's drunk.
Definitely. You are not only associating with Jay, but you were a previous shop owner here on Pacific Avenue.
Yes, I was.
And your shop was?
Bodacious. Bodacious Plants and Pears.
And how was it? Was it successful?
Yeah, it was. And we saved a lot of birds. A lot of people, like, dropped off birds. It's like, I can't take this squawking parrot anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I tamed a lot of birds that came, ones that came through quarantine, we had a pretty good
time. How long were you a merchant here?
She had it for probably 5 or 6 years. And I was
she being?
Deanna Roja.
You were a partner of hers?
Yes, Deanna Roja.
And then the earthquake came and quaked you away?
No, she went off to the Yucatan like 3 months before the quake, 3 or 4 months before the quake. So we let the lease go. Our lease was out and stuff. And 3 months later, earthquake, boom.
And
I had gone up to Wairika.
Wairika, spelled backwards, of course.
Dome Town. You know, the Dome City.
Wairika Bakery, spelled backwards, is...
I used to play in Wairika.
Wairika Bakery.
Did you know that?
It's a palindrome.
Y Baker. How could that be?
It's true.
It's true. It's been a Y.
It does.
Y Baker.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
Isn't that right?
That's cool.
So are you a musician as well?
Yes, absolutely.
And what do you play? Where's your instrument?
Well, I'm...
She's her own instrument.
I believe it.
I've been doing a lot of singing. I'm like the Harmony Nazi.
She's a Harmony Nazi.
The Harmony Nazi.
No harmony for you. For one year.
Southern Harmony Nazi.
No, we can play. We'll be all right.
All right, well, I want to be hearing some music, so I'm going to let you two continue your alcoholic endeavors, or non-alcoholic.
Don't threaten us with a good time.
Certainly not. Not on Pacific Avenue. I wouldn't do that. Anyway,
okay, Robert.
We'll take care of you two. So your history of playing has been for how long? How long have you been a musician here?
74. I came
74.
Here.
Now, what was the difference?
On the small.
Were the
me and Joe, Guitar Joe, Crazy Lee, fucking Crazy Timmy.
Now, was there a similar kind of crackdown in the 70s as there is at 2010?
Like they're trying to do with this hospitality crap and all that?
Yeah.
No, but they you know, not nearly as heavily infested with the, you know, law and the establishment. But, yeah, they always try to keep a lid on it. They try to keep a lid on us, you know. But we can't be stopped. We still can't be stopped.
They can't be stopped.
We'll endure.
Well, let's leave you and your musical pal here, and I'll be back later to look you
like
over more closely.
Cosell. Let me reiterate one more time.
Indeed. Howard Cosell. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, we're talking with
Robert Leon Hutchison, Jr.,
a.k.a. Hutch.
Lone Wolf Hutch, U.S. Naval Air. What can I do for you
now,
folks?
Now, here? Hutch, you're back in town after... I haven't seen you
yes,
for a
I
while.
Yes, I am. I'm back in town. Yeah. What happened? They ran me out of town
right.
because I started talking politics, and I walked by the Veterans Memorial Building to do chaplain duty. So they put me in jail for 4 months. The Deputy Attorney General came down and said, wait, he doesn't have to go to prison because he went over to the judge improperly to say thank you, and he should go to VA... So, which I did. I got out of there. I went to Happy Camp, thanks to Roger, a.k.a.
Slow down for a second. Now, is this when the vets hall was still open? Or?
Yes, it was, but I made sure they closed it down. If I couldn't go in there, nobody could.
I see.
So we got...
You're the man behind the closing of the vets
hall. I was the man behind
the You are the
yeah.
secret power. What? I hadn't been aware of that.
Well, was... it wasn't just me, but once it if I couldn't go in there, nobody could. But it will be reopened shortly.
I hope so.
If not, I'm calling CNN... ABC and CBS and you, and we will say, why not now? Come on.
In if court, not now, then when?
In court. The veterans did. They said they won. They said, well, you're not treating the veterans right. You're neglecting the building, too, which is true.
Yes.
So they said, well, we'll build you another somewhere else, and we'll get back with you. So they're stonewalling us is what they're doing. They cannot move that building. The Department of Interior has a deed and title to the building. The county does not own that building. Congress sanctions who can and who can't go in and out of that building. Now, they had an illegal restraining order against me, which is why I went to jail, basically.
And for what time, what period of time, what months were you in jail? Do you remember?
I was in there last year, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
I see.
I got out New Year's, went to the VA. And I did my time there and skated through there, and the day were good. And then I went to Happy Camp for 6 months, and now I'm back.
Happy Camp is?
Up north, 400 miles.
What is it?
It's up in the mountains. It's inland from Crescent.
What kind of thing is it?
It's just Butte County. They grow pot up there and smoke it and give it away.
So you've been puffing the keef, eh?
Well, I've done that too here and everywhere, down the coast in Ohio.
Cannabis hit.
Well, yeah, I have a card. I have a card.
Potsy Watsy.
Very medicinal. I have a card too, by the way.
A dope smoker.
Well, no, it's not dope. It's marijuana. It's a plant. Now, I don't smoke crack. I did do that.
Well, do you shoot Drano? How about that? Have you tried Drano? No, probably not.
Drano?
How about Ajax?
No, I think
Windex. You lick Ajax?
I might have at one time. Nah, they said it was
how about crack. Windex? Have you tried Windex?
Well, that works pretty good for me, yeah.
All right. It's well, a, I'm going to... We'll
no, get, I haven't tried
We'll
Windex.
Clean your windows,
okay.
buddy. All right.
No, I can't. I'm on probation.
All right. Well, we're not even going to go any further here. We're talking with...
So what kind... Robert Leon Hutchison, a.k.a. Hutch.
Well, you have your occasional interview with Hutch. Hutch, actually, we've talked to at greater length. He was banned from the vets hall. A lot of it on the sort of a personal conflict between him and a former vets hall czar, Tim Bratton, who is no longer involved. Of course, the Vets Hall has been closed, and it's still closed. I haven't heard a word about what's going to be happening with that, except that the courts have held that they can't just shove the vets into inadequate alternate facilities, but there's been no ruling, decision, or action on whether the Vets Hall itself is actually generally okay to reopen, as the vets' engineers claim and have claimed since the spring. I did drive by there, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, and there was a group of people, some of them vets, singing and playing instruments under a canopy right in front of the Vets Hall, which looked interesting. I wondered if for the first time maybe the vets were actually doing a protest, visible educational outreach to the community, but there were no signs and no apparent literature, so I didn't quite know what was going on there. If anybody does know, you might want to call in at 427-3772. I really am going to work on that Mickey Mouse guy who keeps creeping into the studio.
We're here outside the Human Rights Day Fair. It is about 20 to 2 on December 4th, 2010, a Saturday. Unsafe to be homeless in Santa Cruz, says the sign. 47 homeless deaths, 2009. We have a musician strumming a guitar surrounded by big paintings of, looks like Aztec figures and Native American figures. Right to sleep somewhere in Santa Cruz. They got signs all over here. And inside is Julia, who's got her own table and is giving out Huff literature. And we're talking with...
me.
And me, you say you had a rather chilly night outside.
Yeah, it's been pretty cold the last few days. And I didn't have nowhere to sleep, and I didn't have my bedroll on me, so I just grabbed some cardboard out of a dumpster, found a nice little hidey hole alcove, and slept for 3 glorious hours before I woke up freezing my ass off.
You slept alone?
Alone.
Now, is that your standard approach, or do you usually, so we take applications for people to sleep next to you?
The position is full. My imaginary friend is one that's won that position.
See?
He never talks back.
isn't abusive?
Oh, no.
No unsafe sex?
Oh, I don't even know he's there half the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this what you did the night before last as well, or was this just last night?
This was only 2 nights ago. Last night I got lucky.
You had a real friend rather than an imaginary one?
I had a place, yes. I had 4 walls to sleep in, and it was quite warm.
No obligations, no pressures on you to engage in any kinds of behaviors of any other sort?
No crazy behaviors.
No crazy behaviors. Anything on the streets that we should know about? Anything happening out there?
Well, I'm still kind of up in the air on that stupid dog ban.
You may have talked about that, or...
I think we did, but that was a while ago.
Dog ban where? Down on Pacific Avenue?
Because the downtown host, that one in particular, I'm not too fond of her. She's not very hospitable.
This is the head host or another?
No, not the head host. Apparently, the head host, at least she pretends to be nice to you. The other one is unpleasant, period. But she walked up to some homeless kids, and they were standing there, and says, if you're going to have that dog here, you have to move along. And I told them, I said, you know, the dog ban, they're not enforcing the dog ban, you know, there's no dog ban anymore. She's like, yes, there is. And I was like, I've gone to like 3-4 different officers to ask them about this. And they said, the first time they said it was not officially lifted, but they're not enforcing it. And now I don't know for a fact if it's actually lifted or not, but I still don't see them talking to nicely dressed people. They only talk to, or they assume that somebody's homeless and they talk to them.
Have you heard or seen anybody getting tickets for doggy on the mall?
Not lately, not tickets, but, you know, the hospitality guides, it's their job to not do that, what they're doing.
You kind of call them the hostility guys, really. Hospitality may be something of a misnomer.
Except there is one guy that works for them who's really, really nice.
Old Tom?
I think that's his name. He's very pleasant. He doesn't, you know, he's not pushy about it. And half the time, if you're not doing anything too wrong, like, I don't know, if you're alone sitting on a curb somewhere, you know, he's not going to bitch at you about it. But he's very nice. So he's doing his job right. He is hospitable. He is, yeah. He's a good one.
Any reports of other things happening that you believe are credible reports, but you may not have directly experienced or seen?
Not that I can tell. Nobody's really had any issues lately, I guess.
Human Rights Fair. Human Rights Fair. Take it. It's open to the public if you want. Gotcha. Feeling well?
I hurt.
So do you have ailments that Dominican has failed to help you with?
No, I can gladly say I've only been to Dominican one time, and that was because I had pneumonia when I was a teenager. And you can't really screw up on pneumonia too much.
You're still with us, in other words.
Yeah, but I have heard some stories. Oh, boy.
Well, we'll hear more of those stories later when we've been talking with...
Me.
Thank you, me. Join the Raging Granites. Of the Raging Greenies, raging here, and they're being videoed by a number of people, and audioed by yours truly. Another song is tuning out.
And the Raging Grannies, some of whom were at the Human Rights Fair on Saturday at the Galleria, were, you know, in good tune. You can't really hear very much from this rather wretched recording I have. You can find them online if you go to, go to Raging Grannies. You can hear them. I know they came out to support Wes Modes when he was going to trial for... what was it? I think it was, Walking in a Parade, the DIY parade, the do-it-yourself New Year's parade, which is coming up again later this month. And there's some interesting questions as to whether they're going to try to take a hard line and hassle people who form a do-it-yourself parade. With a more rightist city council, that may happen, or they may wisely... simply try to pick off the leaders and ignore the parade generally. That's really the only way to do it. They don't have the person power to go after the whole parade, assuming the parade happens again this year. But the Raging Grannies showed up at Wes Modes' trial, and they've showed up at other places. They showed up in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, where I was cited and then convicted of singing musical songs there. They have never been charged, even though they're a much louder group than we are. Maybe they sing better. Probably they do. But this was a real, interesting test of, I think it was an example of the kind of selective prosecution. I don't like to put myself in royal company like Julian Assange, but I think we were targeted in a similar way locally that the governments target people internationally and nationally that they want to put in jail, or they want to harass, or they want to make it life difficult for. Or maybe they want to send a message to other people that, you know, you do what a police officer tells you, even if the police officer is essentially walking on the Constitution as she proceeds to tell you to move along or to quiet down, but won't tell you how quietly she wants you to play, so that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next and you're at the mercy of some unknown set of tin ears who may or may not like what you're doing, as we were in the case of resident Sean Riley, who decided he wanted to sleep during the day and falsely blamed us, or maliciously, it's hard to tell whether it was simply a mistake or malice operating, for supposedly playing for 4 hours loudly, making unreasonably disturbing noise in front of his apartment at midday, when in fact we were there for an hour and a half, and we sang a few songs, did some literature distribution, nothing unusual or out of the ordinary that Huff doesn't do and hadn't done probably at least a dozen times before at that location, and that other groups do too. That appeal is coming up. In fact, I'm working on that appeal now, and with the help of a couple of legal eagles, we'll see what happens. I have little hope that there's going to be any real justice coming out of the local court system. It's too closely connected with the political power structure downtown, or seems to be, in terms of the kinds of decisions that people like Commissioner Kim Baskett, Judge Deneen Guy, Timothy Volkman, all these judges render, which essentially these are decisions that are against the rights, liberties, and interests of homeless people, performers, and often the general public, if police officers have taken a decision, city officials have taken a decision that they want to restrict certain kinds of behavior, even if it's not lawful or constitutional for them to do so. In my case, it was singing, "Downtown, when you're alone and rents are making you homeless, you can always go." That was apparently now is something that can now be punished if an individual is trying to sleep during the day and that song prevents him from sleeping. Although we were, of course, assured it had nothing to do with the content of the song. So, it is about 7 o'clock, a little bit after. Again, I'm hoping to get some kind of a call from Mike Rhodes of Fresno. He's a Community Alliance newspaper writer, and he's written a number of, I would probably say, dozens of articles on the homeless, documenting their struggle to protect their own property, their own right to survive in Fresno. And he's in the middle of a demonstration at City Hall right now in Fresno. In fact, maybe there's something online about that. Let me take a look and see what I can find. And while I do that, I will, perhaps I'll just take this call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey.
My goodness.
What's going on, Rob?
Well, I rely on you to tell me.
Okay, well, this is it, man. You know, like, it was raining yesterday, you know, and I was out on the levee with my drums, you know. But now my drums can get wet, you know, because they're commercial drums. The heads are plastic and, you know, well, they are wood. And, yeah, they kind of, you know, but I'm not worried about that. But anyway, we got a place to jam. The jam representative is Dreamcatcher, so you got to go through him to find out the place, all you drummers. I can't spread the word, but when it's bad weather, we got a place to jam.
So you moved to a secret location.
There's a secret place, yeah. So we're jamming somewhere, and it's really cool, and as long as you respect the owner and respect his wishes, you know, then we can jam there.
This is an indoor or outdoor?
Indoors.
Indoors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like the vet's hall that's closed, you know, where we could go and jam there, but we never really got an invitation to, so we never did, as a drum circle, you know.
You know, one thing I thought, because you know, that report that you filed a week ago, we put it up online, we got a lot of comments, most of them nasty and negative, but I think that at least we're getting some attention somewhere. I was going to suggest, and I think I did suggest to you, that if somebody has a cell phone that takes, that does audio or video, and who knows, maybe one of the drummers does, that they'd be, you know, that there'd be kind of an agreement among the drummers that there'll be a record made if a police approach them of anything that happens, and maybe that would be a way of making sure that...
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, we're just like WikiLeaks. I mean, we can go back, you know, the drum circle and West Modes and all that, and one day go, look at these heinous idiot cops chasing these people playing drums. What? They have toothpicks in their hands. What is it, their problem? You know what I mean? It's all what Assange did. He's just restating what they've done, and now he's in jail for that. You know, so it's just like, what is wrong with this picture?
Well, what I'm saying, you know? Dave, is that it might be a deterrent if the drummer is organized and had one person every time you guys drum who is authorized to kind of keep an eye on what's going on, and then if the police show up, just start videoing with his cell phone or whatever what's happening.
And then Well, the other thing is on the 14th of December, I believe it's around, got to be there around 9 at the courthouse on Ocean Street and Water for Nathan, who got a ticket just for standing on the levee. You know, and he didn't even have his drums out. He just was there. His drums were on his bike. He
this was last
standing
week,
there, and he's going to get a ticket. He's already got a ticket, and he's going to be, you know, I mean, he's going for the trial thing. He's not going to do what you told me to do, which was...
Well, I think, has he been arraigned yet? Has he been to court at all?
No, this is his court date.
Well, you know, I always suggest...
He said plead what again? Insanity?
No, they are the ones who are insane. But
exactly. I was going to plead to the judge that he's insane.
I would recommend that he disqualify Commissioner Kim Baskett and put it in another court, but that involves...
Qualification. Okay, cool. We'll disqualify Baskett.
Right. You have to, and you can do that either by going to the court and doing it there, or you can
Of an insane cop or a judge or whatever. Because
you
gave him a ticket for standing there.
Right,
and he wasn't even downtown. I mean, I could see, you know, maybe blocking some pedestrians or something, a disgruntled cop.
Right.
You know,
well,
he's got
let
a bike
me tell you again what
Baylor
what,
on the back
census
of it.
Census is coming up. Again, you don't have to go to the court appearance at all. He can actually go to the court window before and just simply, you know, disqualify the commissioner. He may have to go into the law library to get a form to do it. But then he gets another court date, which is set ahead, and he gets arraigned in another court. And an arraignment just means that, you know, he pleads guilty or not guilty, and then he, you know, he gets a trial date.
So he can not go to this court date and just try to disqualify her, right?
He can do
that before the court date?
Yeah, if he does it before the court date, he's okay. If he doesn't do it, then he may get a failure to appear, which he doesn't want to get if he can avoid.
Exactly. No, we want this to go right, you know, in his favor.
And you might want to put up an announcement on, you know, Santa Cruz in
I was yelling
Indiana.
At the cops as they were driving away. He's standing in the street. What'd you give him a ticket for?
Well, I probably gave him a ticket for being on the levee after dark.
No, it was in the afternoon, man.
Well, maybe being on the levee in insufficient sunshine.
Oh, man, he's just a drummer, man.
Well, maybe being a drummer in Santa Cruz without a permit. Actually, those aren't crimes. However,
Man, these guys are getting friggin' obstinate
and just completely ignorant. What actually is the charge, Dave? Have you seen his ticket?
They say he was standing inside the demonstration garden across from CVS.
But
I was there, and he was standing next to his bicycle.
Now, of course, by demonstration...
led him into the garden to take his picture or something.
By demonstration...
The cops made him physically move from the pavement to inside the garden.
So you were a witness to all that.
I was.
Well, that's interesting. Again, I recommend that
man, it's called entrapment.
Dave,
man.
I recommend that...
It's called a rap, man.
Dave,
this
Dave.
Guy got rapped.
Oh, Dave. Dave, I recommend that you... To do this, I'm sorry to keep repeating this, but since you're going to court... What you want to do is have him and you write down as much of the detail of everything you remember, whether it's anything said, any people standing around.
Yeah.
And because that, I mean, and if you haven't done that now, see, memories fade, even if it's only a week old.
No, I completely remember it because I've got that kind of memory that, you know, hey, they just grabbed him out of a group of people.
Write it down.
And they said that he was a suspect, looked like a suspect.
Dave, write it down or speak.
Yeah,
and then they gave him a ticket. Write it down or put it into a tape recorder.
He wasn't even a suspect they were looking for. They just gave him a ticket.
That's just my advice.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Mm-hmm. And, hey, just, you know, to keep it on, you know, we've got a secret drummer thing going if it rains. But the levee's still where it's at.
So there was no drumming on the levee yesterday.
Except for Dave, yeah.
Except for... You?
Yeah, the guy named Chris came by and drummed with me for a while, and then we just stopped. And then I got stopped in traffic a couple of times. People stopped. Where's the drummers? Where's the drummers? And I was like, there's no drummers.
Oh, no.
Because of the rain. Because it's all natural.
Well,
skin.
The rain usually
Most
does
them,
tend to
know,
put a damper on the drummers. That's true.
You know.
Well, thank you for the update, and keep it letting us know what's going on. December 14th isn't far away, but that's only an arraignment if even... If he doesn't disqualify Basket, it's still just an arraignment. If he does, it won't be happening on that date anyway. So.
Okay, cool. Cool. So it's just a kind of a social call.
Use some information to the community. I think it's a good idea. Thank you for letting us know.
Yeah, and hey, you take it easy, Rob. And remember, WikiLeaks and Assange, he's the right man, and journalists need to study him.
Hear, hear. Thank
you. Hear, hear. Thanks.
And again, I recommend people send Rotkin, our mayor, an email requesting that we do what Berkeley is considering doing, which is to pass a resolution supporting whistleblowers and journalists. And that would be WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning. WikiLeaks is Julian Assange. So... couple of articles here struck my fancy. You may have read them if you follow this stuff in the Sentinel or in the Chronicle. House bill narrowly kills prospect of Guantanamo closure. Administration's half-hearted efforts come to an end. A catch-all spending bill, which narrowly passed yesterday in the House of Representatives, effectively ends the Obama administration's effort to close the detention center at Guantanamo Bay, such as it is. The bill, which passed on a 212-206 vote, forbids the Obama administration from transferring any detainees held at Guantanamo Bay to the United States for the purposes of giving them an actual trial, and mentions Khalid Sheikh Mohammed by name. I want to remind you that the Democrats still have a huge majority in the House until the new House sits. So this is a Democratic majority vote. Let me put it this way. It's taken a significant number of Democrats to help pass this vote, keeping Guantanamo open, the shame of a nation. This means that even the farcical, half-hearted efforts by the Obama administration, writer Jason Ditz continues, to close the facility will have to stop. And the administration... which already seems quite comfortable with the Bush-era-style military tribunals, won't even be giving lip service to the idea that the facility will close at some point. President Obama has made the closure of Guantanamo one of his first pledges upon taking office, insisting he would get it done in 12 months. After failing in 2009, he made virtually no effort in 2010, though he still claimed it was his goal. Leaks and Leakers. This is an article by Philip Giraldi, who is, I believe, a former intelligence agent guy. And all this is also, I believe, from antiwar.org, the website, which is mirroring the WikiLeaks websites in case they get taken down, and sending people to other websites to find out where to get the documents that WikiLeaks is attempting to make available to the American public and to the world community. Call me Saul on the road to Damascus, Giraldi writes. I have seen the light. As a former intelligence officer, I was initially appalled at the leak of a quarter of a million classified documents by someone who had responsibility for protecting them. I was highly skeptical of the entire WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning saga, but following the leaks has convinced me that there is a lot of material that deserves a public airing to demonstrate to the American people how Washington is pursuing a senseless policy almost everywhere in the world. I've been particularly mortified in reading the accounts of meetings of U.S. ambassadors and undersecretaries of state with their foreign counterparts, encounters revealing an unbelievable arrogance derived from the Bush administration's dictum, "You are either with us or against us." Persian King of Kings Darius addressing his satraps could not do it any better. The WikiLeaks plus Manning story has truly revealed that the U.S. government will do anything necessary to silence its critics legally or illegally. The way in which it is orchestrating a highly questionable international effort against both WikiLeaks and Julian Assange is despicable. There exists a sharp divide between those who believe government secrets should always be protected at all costs and those who believe that secrecy in government exists only to conceal official misbehavior. Obviously, there is a middle ground hidden somewhere between the two, but those who favor the narrative that accepts that there is a nefarious government in Washington ruthlessly manipulating a world empire have pretty much gotten it right. The documents and the Obama administration behavior together tell the tale. There is an enormous amount of hypocrisy in those who are defending the government's right to overclassify and deny access to the information that has been used to justify going to war, among other crimes. Insiders in government have no qualms about abusing classified information as long as it suits their purposes. Dick Cheney used insider's secret information to out CIA officer Valerie Plume to punish her husband. The White House leaked intelligence that turned out to be bogus to Judith Miller at the New York Times to make the case for going to war against Iraq. George Tenet, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, wrote a book called In the Eye of the Storm, which earned him in excess of $4 million. He worked in an SCIF, which stands for Sensitive Compartmentalized Information Facility, run by the defense and intelligence contractor SAIC, and had access to all of his classified papers to help him write the book. Bear in mind that he was retired with no official status at the time, was writing something for profit, and was using freely provided government resources to turn a buck. There was apparently no problem in his using classified material. Unauthorized release of classified information and what becomes of it was also the focus in the trial that was terminated in May 2009 of Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman. APEC employees, that's American Israeli something action committee, political action committee, employees who passed sensitive intelligence to Israeli government officials and to Glenn Kessler at the Washington Post. The very same people at the Wall Street Journal and the Weekly Standard who are now calling on the federal government to declare war on WikiLeaks and to summarily execute Julian Assange were at that time complaining about the fact that Rosen and Weissman had been charged with a crime because everyone passes around classified information in Washington, particularly to Israel, which is okay because it is an ally, which, in fact, it is not. Apparently, the talking heads of the Wall Street Journal believe it is all right to trust classified information to the kleptocrats in Tel Aviv, but not to the American public, which has been footing the outrageous bill for the bloated and ineffective intelligence and diplomatic communities during the past 10 years. Newt Gingrich, meanwhile, is calling Assange, who has threatened no one, a terrorist. By that standard, what should he call former officials like Doug Feith and Paul Wolfowitz, who started a war that has killed hundreds of thousands? Specialist Manning is undoubtedly a whistleblower, though the government will try to portray him as someone engaged in espionage. That's the guy who leaked the documents, they say, to WikiLeaks. Whistleblowers should be encouraged as a check on irresponsible government and should be protected by law when they reveal something that is either illegal or unconstitutional. Government is intrinsically opposed to such transparency, recently and increasingly using the state secrets privilege to deny whistleblowers their day in court. Daniel Ellsberg did the right thing when he published the Pentagon Papers about Vietnam. Sybil Edmonds did likewise when she revealed details of foreign espionage and influence buying in the United States. I don't recall that, but stories about CIA torture, renditions, and secret prisons, as well as accounts of Army thrill killings and the goings-on at Abu Ghraib, all originated as leaks and were needed to reveal the war crimes being committed by the U.S. government in its hideous, quote, global war on terror. Contrary to the message emanating from the chattering media, WikiLeaks has embarrassed many, but it has neither killed nor endangered anyone. Washington's relationships with most foreign nations are based on mutual interests, and they will continue in spite of concerns expressed by Hillary Clinton and others. And the positive far outweighs any potential negatives. when WikiLeaks revealed how U.S. helicopter crews had recklessly targeted and killed civilians in Iraq, a story originating with Manning, it was a good leak, showing just how dirty and amoral the American-initiated war in Iraq had become. Likewise, its release of bundles of documents relating to the fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan served a good purpose in revealing that the U.S. government was lying about both wars and ignoring its own intelligence analysis to continue to blunder around like a blind elephant in a small room. As the documents continue to appear, they tell a tale of how the American empire is run and how, like an iceberg, most of it is concealed beneath the surface, hidden from public view. Manning took it upon himself to release the hundreds of thousands of secret papers, reportedly because of his belief that the diplomatic documents expose almost criminal political back dealings and explain how the First World exploits the Third in detail. He was right to do so. The American juggernaut must be stopped, and the transparency provided by Manning and other whistleblowers is the best weapon to accomplish that. My only remaining concern continues to be the possibility that WikiLeaks itself has an agenda beyond exposing the machinations of an essentially duplicitous government. If it does, that will presumably emerge eventually, but for the present, WikiLeaks is providing a necessary service. I do not know if Julian Assange, co-founder of WikiLeaks, is working for any intelligence service, as has been alleged in some circles. It does seem to me that the release of documents so far has been selective, but perhaps as more than surface, that impression will vanish. I've heard that the newly formed U.S. Cyber Command, aided by Israelis, is behind the hacking campaign directed against WikiLeaks and its servers. Particularly ironic, as President Barack Obama has several times extolled the freedom of the Internet. Apparently that is only true if it is hosting criticism of Iran or China. The United States should not be mounting a huge international campaign to silence WikiLeaks, nor will it be successful, nor should it attempt to regulate the Internet, which is the inevitable next step. And it's the attempts to personally punish Assange, which might succeed, are a measure of how low America and its allies in Europe and Australia have sunk. He has broken no law, even in an age of Patriot Acts and military commissions, and the charges against him in Sweden appear to be a setup. Once upon a time, there was a rule of law in the United States and a presumption of innocence until proven guilty, if you have enough money, of course. But no longer. Ultimately, WikiLeaks will rise and fall based on its credibility and its ability to tell stories that are being suppressed elsewhere and that the public believes should be heard. WikiLeaks must be allowed to speak. And that's a story by Philip Giraldi. Today, in today's anti-war, www.antiwar.org, and it's called Leaks and Leakers. And perhaps to give people some hope, we don't want the opiate of hope or the audacity of hope, as Obama's book was called, but whether there's real hope, it's hard to tell. But here's an article called, Is a Peace Movement Finally Awakening? But that will have to wait because we have a phone call. You are on Free Radio. Good evening.
Robert, Uncle Dennis here.
Hey there, Dennis. You got a show coming up in half an hour.
That's true, but I'm going to discuss on my show some of those viewpoints that WikiLeaks is actually a front for the U.S. intelligence service. So, that's from an email link given to me by one of our listeners. So, stay tuned for that on From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to be discussing that.
Okay, and I know that I've gotten an email about Mossad being involved and how the WikiLeaks is soft on information exposing Israeli activities, and that may be, indicate that the Israeli, but again, there's less than 1,000 WikiLeaks cables have been released, and there are, 280,000 of them total, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
There is this sort of data bomb that the WikiLeaks people are thinking about releasing which is an encrypted version of all the cables, and if something untoward happens to the organization, they're going to release the password to that data bomb. So
has the data bomb actually been released without the password at the moment, or is it still?
I believe it's available now, yes.
So are you yourself going to be providing that information to the Santa Cruz community, Uncle Dennis?
No, I think the Santa Cruz community is smart enough to go figure that one out.
Well, if not, you'll certainly explain it to them at 8 o'clock when you come into the studio.
Well, I'll certainly see what I can do.
Hey, thank you for letting us know what we are likely to hear when we tune in.
See you in a while.
All right, man.
Bye.
And that's Uncle Dennis. He does From the Cream to the Dregs from 8 to 11. And usually also stuff around Earth First updates and interesting chanties and tunes from a bygone era, the 60s and 70s. And, you know, some news as well. So tune in to Uncle Dennis at 8 o'clock tonight in about half an hour. We have a caller again. You are on free radio.
Hey, bro, I'm just toked for you. Hold on a second.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm taking a toke, man, just for you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for Skidmark Bob or who was that that just called?
Uncle Dennis.
Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks, Dennis, man, for bringing in WikiLeaks and seeing how far we can leak all over this place and talk about historical discussions that are just already history and try to get busted for.
All right. Well, jump through. Dave, you call.
Have a good day and keep up with that
fair
good
enough.
Journalism, Bob.
Thank you. And maybe you can call in to Uncle Dennis and plague him with your tokes. I was going to read an article, Is a Peace Movement Finally Awakening, by Sheldon Richmond, and but I may not be able to because it looks like suddenly phone calls are arriving. Hey there, you're on free radio.
Hello, Robert.
Yes.
I want to talk about taxes, just a little bit of it.
Taxes?
Yes.
Which taxes are we talking about? Any taxes or... Sales taxes, income taxes?
Income taxes, yeah. And how they have it structured right now, you know as well as I do, somebody who has a dollar and let's say $10 is the daily income and you take away a dollar from them, that's pretty significant as opposed to the person that's $100 a day income and you take a dollar away. So getting to that note, let's say income tax starts after $50,000. In income. Below that, nobody gets taxed. And then it gets tiered all the way up. So the people who actually help these the large companies, the people that actually help them make their money are the workers. So give them a better break and just start tiering the tax all the way up. How about that?
You mean a progressive income tax? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. How are we going to encourage people to invest in large businesses? They need to be able to make money. They need an incentive. I mean, what are you, some sort of a commie? What is your deal, man?
I believe in the trickle-up theory, not the trickle-down.
No, it's more of the tinkle-down theory here in the U.S.
It is the tinkle-down.
Well, an interesting suggestion. I'm a big favor of, frankly, distributing the wealth, as long as it's not my wealth, of course. But... You know, it's obvious, you know, the huge disparities in wealth that have grown and the loss of power by people who are creating the wealth is breathtaking and nauseating and numbing. But, you know, these are kind of issues that are so broad and frankly that I haven't got a lot of new information to give that I'm going to move on unless there's something else you want to say.
No, just a thought to throw out there. Start a revolution.
Indeed. I'll buy that.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Of course, that's easy to say until you get shot or maimed or your house gets burned down. So, you know, talk is cheap on the radio. I'm not living in Haiti where there actually are riots and people are burning stuff and they're pissed with the election that was generally conceded to have been rigged over there, not to mention the cholera epidemic, not to mention... We're talking about homelessness. I prate a lot about homelessness, but there are a million people homeless over there, and it's one of the most gross obscenities I've ever heard of, right off our shores. Anyway, ignoring all that and moving right along to what I was going to read before, is a peace movement finally awakening? What America needs today, according to Sheldon Richmond, again, I think this is antiwar.org, most today is a peace movement, a broad-based coalition that opposes not only the American Empire's operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, as well as less overt activities elsewhere, but also its attendant accretion of presidential power, which diminishes or eliminates civil liberties and the traditional protections accorded criminal suspects. Unfortunately, there have been impediments in the development of this long-overdue movement. People on the right, typically, are not inclined to oppose wars. Even if they are uneasy about a given war, they equate anti-war activity with left-wing opposition to the military, failure to support the troops, and lack of patriotism. If a Republican is running the war, they are even less likely to make a fuss. Some on the right are authentically anti-empire and are ready to join an anti-war coalition, but they seem to be waiting for others to take the initiative. The left, of course, is much more comfortable opposing war and executive power, and did so during the presidency of George W. Bush, but they can alienate potential non-left coalition members by stressing their interventionist domestic agenda. A more recent problem with the left is Barack Obama. With a few exceptions, Obama's election has silenced the critics of empire, invasion, occupation, predator bombings, and civil liberties destruction. Maybe they feel he is one of them, so they are giving him time to settle in before he begins to dismantle the empire. But Obama is well into his second year, and there's been scant progress on this front. It's safe to say that he has no intention of scaling back, let alone liquidating his empire. Maybe that's why a group of prominent leftist intellectuals, activists, and actors have ended the ceasefire and have finally criticized Obama's war policies. It's about time. In a statement placed in the New York Review of Books, headlined Crimes Are Crimes, No Matter Who Does Them, the group said, crimes under Bush are crimes under Obama and must be resisted by anyone who claims a shred of conscience. You may have heard me say something like this, I don't know, 10 times every broadcast. Hear, hear. The group listed 4 reasons for speaking out, but clearly that was not an exhaustive list. First was the Obama administration's claim of authority to assassinate even American citizens for suspected terrorist activities before there has been any judicial finding of guilt. That is an extraordinary claim of unilateral executive power. The Obama administration says it has the right to kill people, such as Anwar al-Awlaki, an American citizen and Muslim cleric living in Yemen, who says he was the mentor of the mass killer at Fort Hood and of the would-be airplane bomber over Detroit last year. Al-Awlaki, who has indeed made inflammatory statements about killing American citizens, is not operating on a traditional battlefield, but rather is suspected, having never been charged or tried, of engaging in illegal activities. But Obama's assertion of this authority is not restricted to Al-Awlaki. Rather, it is a reference to the government's to-be-killed list. Second was U.S. troops firing on civilians in Iraq in 2007, a massacre captured on video posted on the Internet by WikiLeaks. Among others, 2 Reuters personnel were killed and 2 children were injured while the bodies were being collected by other Iraqis. As ugly as this video of the killing of 12 Iraqis was, the statement said, the chatter recorded in the helicopter cockpit is even more monstrous. The Pentagon says that there will be no charges against these soldiers, and the media absolves them of blame. They were under stress, the story goes. Our brave men and women must be supported. Meanwhile, those who leaked the video came under government surveillance and are targeted as national security threats. Third was a massacre earlier this year in Afghanistan. Quote, the Pentagon has recently acknowledged, after denials, a massacre near the city of Gardez, Afghanistan, on February 12, 2010. 5 people were killed, including 2 pregnant women, leaving 16 children motherless. The U.S. military first said the 2 men killed were insurgents and the women were victims of a family honor killing. But the Afghan government accepts the eyewitness reports that U.S. Special Forces killed the men, a police officer and a lawyer, and the women, and then dug their own bullets out of the women's bodies to destroy evidence. Top U.S. military officials have now admitted that U.S. soldiers killed the family in their house. Finally, just weeks earlier, a story broken in Harper's by Scott Horton carried news that 3 supposed suicides of detainees in Guantanamo in 2006 were not suicides, but homicides carried out by American personnel. This passed almost without comment. worse than Bush. The statement pulled no punches and seemed designed to awaken Obama's progressive base, which thought that Bush and Cheney were devils incarnate. Among the signers were authors Daniel Ellsberg and Noam Chomsky and actor Ed Asner. In some respects, this is worse than Bush, it said. First, because Obama has claimed the right to assassinate American citizens whom he suspects of terrorism merely on the grounds of his own suspicion or that of the CIA, something Bush never claimed publicly. Second, Obama says that the government can detain you indefinitely even if you have been exonerated in a trial, and he has publicly floated the idea of preventive detention. Third, the Obama administration is, in expanding the use of unmanned drone attacks, argues that the U.S. has the authority under international law to use extrajudicial killing in sovereign countries with which it is not at war. Acts that might have been anomalies under Bush, the group noted, have become consecrated into standard operating procedure by Obama, who claims, as did Bush, executive privilege and state secrecy in defending the crime of aggressive war. Unsurprisingly, the Obama administration has refused to prosecute any members of the Bush regime who are responsible for war crimes, including some who admitted to waterboarding and other forms of torture, thereby making their actions acceptable for him or any future president. It closed with an appeal to end this complicity of silence. This is a hopeful sign indeed. It is hard to think of a more flagrant case of a presidential candidate's selling the American voters a bill of goods. True, Obama promised to expand the war in Afghanistan, a promise, alas, that he is keeping. But he also promised to get combat troops out of Iraq on a timetable. But now there's talk of letting that deadline slip. On the other hand, he led voters to think he would end the Bush era's abuse of suspects' rights and of everyone's civil liberties. But his Justice Department plans to use civilian courts only for cases if it feels certain it can win. Others will be sent to the military tribunals Obama once decried. Still, other cases will not be tried at all. Now he's even open to watering down Miranda rights for terrorism suspects when they are questioned by prosecutors. Guantanamo, which was supposed to close by the end of 2009, is still open, as are the secret prisons in Afghanistan, where detainees are accorded no rights. Rendition, in which terrorism suspects are shipped to other countries for interrogation, continues. And Obama fights to keep certain lawsuits challenging government misconduct out of court on grounds of state secrets. If the cumulative effect of all this isn't enough to shake the left out of their Obama swoon, what would it take? Maybe the New York Review ad will be the spark needed to launch a real peace movement so that this immoral and criminal behavior will finally stop. And this is an article that... Well, it's by a guy called Sheldon Richman. It originally appeared in the August 2010 issue of the Freedom Daily, so I guess the peace movement hasn't gotten very far because that was August and this is December. And there's been no big surge on the left. I guess they were too interested in keeping the Democratic Party hacks in power. Poll, Afghans losing faith in U.S. increasingly back insurgents, growing support for negotiated settlement. Again by Jason Ditz, December 6th. A new poll conducted by a myriad of international media outlets, including ABC News, BBC, ARD, and The Washington Post, no idea what ARD is, showed huge pessimism among Afghans, a strong trend moving against support for the U.S. occupation forces and in favor of supporting the insurgency. The poll shows confidence in the NATO occupation eventually being successful, down to only 36% from 48% last year, and only 43% view the U.S. favorably, the lowest in 6 years. Perhaps the biggest concern, or the bigger concern, however, is that the view toward the Taliban is moving the other way. Last year, only 8% of Afghans saw terror attacks as justified. This year, the number climbed to 27%. And it has to be said, by the way, that most of the civilian casualties in Afghanistan are from, as I understand it, Taliban or insurgent attacks. So while we want to get our asses out of there, we sure don't want to distort the data and say who's killing who and who's not killing who. A plurality also generally blamed the U.S. and NATO for civilian deaths, 35%. In the end, the figures likely speak more to the war weariness than anything, as a whopping 73% support a negotiated settlement with the Taliban, the largest number yet. The poll results come a year after the most recent U.S. escalation of the war and point to popular opinion in Afghanistan getting precipitously worse, even as Pentagon officials emphasize the need to secure popular support to win the conflict. The escalation, it seems, is eroding that support. And a number of articles on WikiLeaks. I suggest people take a look at Salon.com. Greenwald is a very articulate writer who's been covering the issue very closely. He probably has gotten some updates even in the last few hours. Yeah, people following WikiLeaks, and we'll be hearing more about it from Dennis when he comes in about 15 minutes. We'll probably know that MasterCard and Visa have pulled the plug on WikiLeaks payments. I'm thinking of pulling the plug on my Visa card. I'm going to try to find out. I do not want to support Amazon.com anymore, for example, because not only are they have they banned WikiLeaks payments or to and what is the actual thing they've done? I think they've cut off WikiLeaks from payment through Amazon. They may have also done more, but they're using. They're selling stuff on Amazon that makes use of WikiLeaks. It's kind of funny, or not funny at all, kind of grimly hypocritical. And anyway, there's going to be a lot of talk about that. There is a lot of talk about that elsewhere. This show needs to talk about other things. And so I'm going to slip back to a September. I won't call it a flashback. It's some tape I didn't play of the, I don't think I played it anyway, of the Peace Camp 2010 protest. And it'll speak for itself and remind us that there were people who were fighting on this issue and who are still fighting in court for the rights of poor and homeless people and the rights of people to be in public spaces and protest, whether they're homeless or not, around issues that Mike Rodkin doesn't want to see publicly protested, at least not at night, not at City Hall. He specifically and others, Danette Shoemaker, City Manager Martine Bernal, Acting Police Chief Kevin Vogel, colluded to come together secretly and privately to essentially circumvent even the legal process and declare the entire City Hall complex out of bounds at night, and then started giving tickets to people for holding up protest signs there at night. And those tickets won't be subject to a jury trial, but just to the rubber-stamping behaviors of Commissioner Baskett and Judges Gallagher and Connolly, who I'm afraid will go along with this program, unless we can get into some kind of a federal court, which, of course, takes a lot of money. But the real issue is what's happening underneath. Are poor and homeless people facing a continued criminalization for simply doing what they need to do every night, which is sleep? And I think the answer there is yes. But I think, you know, before I play that, I may have something more here. Let me see. I do, actually. So let me play a little bit more of some more recent street interviews, because recent is better, really. And then perhaps on Sunday we'll go back and review some of this Peace Camp 2010 stuff.
I'm downtown here with Lito, who's doing a little kind of security guard watching. Here we are at Pacific and Soquel, and here comes PSI. Is that Stranger or the other one? I'm not sure. They're two different secure PSI guards now, Pacific.
Well, they just got me under the bridge for all my blankets and everything, my newest drum that I needed to fix. All my court paperwork, all that. So,
and now, this was just a few moments ago, or
yep.
And what
they think it's cool to rob from people under the bridge.
Now, were you present when they took it, or did
no.
you got back? They had taken it.
Yeah, I went to go look for a dry space to move it. Yeah, got us for it.
Did they leave you a receipt or any of that sort?
No.
Do we know
just
who took
a mess.
It? Just a mess. So
yeah.
You're pretty sure it was the security and
city worker. Yeah, the city workers and the security dudes they have riding the levee now.
But do we know it was them or could it have been another person, a private person?
No, it was them.
And you know that because?
Because when I was walking back towards there on the levee, I seen the truck pulling out.
But all the people were gone.
And you also lost some stuff.
Oh, not my good friend again.
And did you, so you yourself haven't lost any possessions yet?
Basically, just the attitude, the whole ability attitude, the way you took the situation was wrong.
What's your name? Robert.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, so you yourself have not been too happy with how the police are treating people downtown or how the city...
That's wrong.
And who the hell are they thinking? You know what I'm saying? What the hell are they thinking, man? Who the fuck they think they are?
Now, did other people also lose their property or just you?
My friend James, all of his stuff was gone, and it looked like they had left some stuff, but they were going to probably go back. I don't know. I didn't see them, but they were probably just happy with taking my shit.
Sorry to hear it, man.
Yeah, me too, because now I get to go to jail because I don't know any of the court information I needed and all the paperwork I needed to take to Emmeline I ain't got anymore. So, you know, it's funny how they keep stealing and fucking off all my work and taking all my work. You know what I'm saying? For the last 5 years or more, they keep taking all my work. Anytime I get any close to completing any art, anything like that, they come and take it. My drums, they take it. And that's cool, right? I can't come up with my own hand, right? If they would have stopped fucking me off, I would have been off the street a long time ago of my own hand. You know what I'm saying? My truck and everything,
saying.
They just took all that, too. You know what I'm saying? I would have been up off the street of my own hand. I don't need their programs. I don't need none of their programming. I don't need none of their prison systems. I don't need none of that shit.
Yeah.
I am the change.
You need to be left alone, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I need to be, you know, let work. Just because I do different work than they do, not everybody can be a cop or a fucking janitor. If we were all cops and janitors, what would there be to do?
So, this has happened to you more than once, right?
Constant. Multiples of times. Over and over and over again.
And is it the same city agency that does it, or is it different agencies?
I imagine it's the same people. And as soon as I find out who and where, we'll bring them down to the level.
Have you ever been able to retrieve any of this stuff?
Nope.
Because it may, and I think they're required to store it if it has a certain value.
As far as I know, they take it straight to a trash somewhere, and they won't tell us where.
Have you ever talked to the service workers about this? Because that might be a helpful thing to do, or maybe not. I don't know.
I don't even know who they are.
So again, we're talking with Lito Miguel de Leon, and it's about 3 o'clock on December 8th, and we're here at the corner of Soquel and Pacific, and it looks like within the last hour you've discovered that your property has disappeared from where it was stored, right?
Taken by the city, because if I'm not going in their programmings, then, you know, hell with that. Never mind let a man come up with his own hand. Or help him out with some skills instead of try to imprison him. Control. Welcome to Nazi America. This is a one-man revolution. Because I ain't seen not one motherfucker really helping on this shit. Especially with any of the ideas. We could have had all this shit on video. Audio. We knew it was coming. We know it's still coming. But nobody's willing. All the shit they talk. Everybody out there talking about their revolutionaries, all this shit. I ain't seen nothing from them. Nothing. They ain't helping none. So they can keep talking because that's all it is talk.
Thank you,
sissies.
Thank you for the report, Lito.
No more justice, just me. You know what I'm saying? Just me.
I hear you. Thank you, and thank you.
And it's interesting, Lito is suggesting what I've suggested, too, that there be audio and video documentation of this, what is really illegal seizure and destruction of homeless property. I mean, it's being done under the pretext that the property is abandoned or that it's trash. This is what it was done in Fresno, but the courts didn't buy it, and they charged the Fresno agencies $2.3 million and issued an injunction against it. I think we could probably get something similar here if we started getting the kind of documentation that the Fresno activists, Simone Rhodes, Mike Rhodes' daughter, actually, a UCSC student, was able to gather over in Fresno, and then they took it to the lawyers, out-of-town lawyers, who thought this is sufficient to win a legal case. And I've been encouraging people to try to document this, and Huff is interested in trying to prepare for this. Huff meets every Wednesday, in case you want to be a part of a Huff project around this issue. We meet at the Abbey Cafe at 10:30 in the morning. That's up at Vintage Faith Church at Highland and Mission Streets in the corner where the stoplight is. So if you want more information about this, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the call-in number, I should say is my home phone number. If you want to get back to me, it's also the number for HUFF. And I will gratefully accept any assistance. We actually have some people who are, they put together a pretty solid Human Rights Day fair booth. And actually they made some money for HUFF. And my hat's off to Julia and others who were involved in that whole process. Holidays are approaching. Students are leaving. People are going off with their families. So it may be that there's going to be less happening. We had, I think, two people at the last HUFF meeting, although the previous week we had seven or eight. So it's, we have a varying membership in Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but the projects are quite doable if we sit down to do them and if people are interested, which has to do with videoing and documenting the destruction of homeless property and then getting that documentation to potential legal sources, maybe even the same lawyers who took the case in Fresno. If you're interested in this project, give a call to 423-HUFF or come to a HUFF meeting. A little more street interview, and then we're going to make way for Uncle Dennis.
Mugger Chris, you're down here on the corner. Any reports from you with your mini Christmas tree on the corner here?
Yeah, it's terrible. The giving is terrible this year.
Recording. Good, thank you, man.
Yay. Thank you, Ito.
They just took all this stuff.
I know. I bet they did, man. The fuckers, man. They've been doing it all up and down the river bottom. There's about the fourth or fifth guy I've heard that's got all this shit fucking taken. So, since I've been in just today. So.
How long you been here at this corner?
A few hours, maybe 3 hours, maybe.
You have a little hat and a teeny tiny Christmas tree, almost a Christmas sprout, here next to the, right in front of the Borders area, but strategically placed so as not to violate the very, very difficult to follow downtown ordinance.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, any comments about anything that's happened today other than these property seizures you've heard about on the levee?
No. The question sounds leading, though. Is there something I've missed that I'm supposed to have seen?
No.
All right. No? I mean,
anyway, there was someone who offered...
You do want to talk to the Gypsy fellow who does the readings?
Yes, he was telling me there was racial discrimination going on.
Yeah, so he says. But, I mean, just, he's got his side of it. I didn't see the incident, man. I mean, but he's definitely having a beef with that same... And that was the same cop when he first came on, his very first day. Remember, I called you. I had a standoff going on with him right down here in front of Borders.
The security guard, stranger.
The same guy, anyway, yeah.
S. Stranger.
His name is Shannon Stranger. He's one of the PSI security guards, I should say, though. Boy, that's an old one. Not PSI, but false alarm or first alarm, as they like to call themselves.
So he can be an asshole. Now, he got set straight by others with regard to me, and he's been very, very uber polite and very indulgent and whatnot with me, but he apparently, has taken a very strong disliking to, and I don't know his name, the fellow there, the gypsy card reader. So, I certainly, if he's telling the truth about him all the time calling him gypsy, that alone is enough to get the man fired, because a gypsy is a very derogatory term to the Roma, and not considered, it's like nigga. It would be the equivalent of him calling a black person a nigga. So, if it's true, and if he can bring some witnesses to bear on just that one complaint of his of being called a gypsy, then I think he's got a very serious, complaint on my hands. I mean, a lot of people take it for granted, and we use the word gypsy all the time, without much thought or concern. But if you speak to any Roma, they'll tell you it's a term of extreme derision that's never used by themselves.
Similar to the word.
And indeed, we had I played the interview with the Roma Tarot card reader, who claimed that not only he but others face specific discrimination, particularly because of color on Pacific Avenue. And I've heard that before from a number of folks of color. In fact, it's rare to find a working class person of color who hasn't experienced that at some point in Santa Cruz that I've talked to. And it's just a reality, frankly, we're all tinged with racism here. It's part of the air we breathe. It's something you don't really It's not something you're often consciously aware of until it's brought out. And that's just the reality of it. It's also true, of course, with respect to prejudice against homeless people, prejudice against women, against disabled people, elderly people. It's the fear of the other, you know?
Jip. Don't jip me.
CJ Stock.
CJ, I notice you're walking around with a guitar on your back slung over your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do for a living.
And are you? Where can people hear you play your pieces?
Usually over in front of clouds, but on a wet day like this, I don't dare take this old guitar out because it's been sitting in a closet unstrung for 25 years.
And what kind of a guitar is it?
It's a Gibson Epiphone. The last year of the Gibson Epiphone. And it's a nice little guitar. She sounds sweet. I can't wait to keep playing and make the tone better.
Any other reports from the street?
Nothing going on.
And thank you for the update.
Everybody's going hungry.
You're going hungry yourself?
Yeah, I ain't got no money. I don't dare take this out or it'll kill it. This moisture out here, it's like, well, like a, there's a 80% humidity factor out today. It'd take 20 minutes and then it'd start buckling and twisting because seasoned wood and moisture don't get along. Yeah.
Thank you, CJ.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We're driving to the two sellouts at the farmer's market.
Yeah, your name, sir, is
Jacob.
And
Sean.
The two of you were actually at the same spot serving people food about a year ago.
That's right.
Before the time Lulu Carpenters took over the drum circle.
Actually, these are two, activists who are serving food and coffee at the drum circle free of charge when it was at the farmer's market area. And that was before it was driven away by, actually it was in a coup done by the Downtown Association and the Farmers Market. They just moved over it one day and took over that parking lot without any kind of advance information or discussion. And the tree under which the drum circle played is now occupied by a Lulu Carpenter's coffee stand. And these two guys, I ran into them. They were at a little, in a little pavilion, which you'll hear me describing, near the Lulu Carpenter's coffee stand. I talked to them yesterday, and they've they've become a part of the establishment. They've become a part of the established gathering down there, the for-profit gathering that destroyed the community, the free community gathering that was there previously. And they're sweet guys. They were helpful. They moved with the drum circle when it moved to the area across from CVS Drugs on Soquel near the bridge until that was fenced off by the city in its continuing attempt to destroy the drum circle. And now they are apparently, they've gone into business and joined the problem instead of the solution.
Area. That's right, yeah. We've been here for longer than that. I've been here for 5 years hanging out with the drum. Actually, I've been here for 10 years before, you know, hanging out with the drum circle for a long time. And I love this spot so much that we decided to stick around.
You actually have to pay money now to do the soy candles, the prayer flags, and the shanti tree area that you're now doing. That's the signs you have up.
Yes, we have to pay money. That's the least of my worries. Goodness gracious.
What are the most of your worries?
Most of my worries are all the sad and lonely people out here in the world, man. We want to need someone to give them a big hug.
They're sad and lonely. They got Lulu's Carpenters. They got Shoddy Tree. They got the Pickles Jams. They don't need drums and crowds of people gathering with food not bombs. That's not needed anymore.
I love the drum circle. Don't get me wrong, man. But right now, it's actually not happening. Go up on the levee. Check it out. It's not that exciting.
No place for them. They moved them along. Not only did they move them out of here, they moved them away from the new space they found.
They did. Yeah. I don't know.
They roped off that area so that they couldn't be used. It's it's a deliberate attempt to destroy, and an effective attempt to destroy a cultural institution downtown, including the food servers and coffee givers who seem to attach themselves.
Yeah, well, but all I got to say is that I'm here. I get to hang out. The people want to come hang out. We're all here still hanging out, you know.
Why don't you provide free coffee? I know Lulu Carpenters wouldn't like it.
You want some tea?
Oh, that's very thoughtful of you. Thank you. I'll send all my friends over who are thirsty.
Please do. Actually,
we'd get a lawsuit for free coffee. We would get busted if we gave away free coffee because nothing's free.
Well, perhaps we could do it on the sidewalk. I could have a free coffee stand right over here, right next to you.
Sounds good.
For a limited time only until the police showed up, yes.
Limited release.
Busted for giving away coffee on the sidewalk. It's a whole new Santa Cruz here. Again, we've been talking with...
Jacob.
And Sean.
Thank you both.
Okay. Right on, Rob.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're actually 30 seconds over time, and Uncle Dennis is coming into the studio. He's carrying the books with him and keeping things, shall we say, the accounts will be in order. And the no accounts will also be in order, hopefully.
The no accounts will be out of order.
Well, perhaps so. In any case, I will be back on Sunday, presumably, in my usual manner. I may be missing a show or two in the weeks ahead because I'm getting some eye surgery because... getting rid of the mote in my eye or the beam in my neighbor's, or I'm not sure what it is. But in any case...
Detached retina?
No, cataracts, actually.
Cataracts.
Yes, you are
those
Dennis.
Those are not waterfalls.
No. They're not, unfortunately not. No. It's a sad thing, as you know. As you get older, and you can't help it. So if you
can.
Oh, you can? Really?
Yeah, there's a way to avoid getting older.
I suppose so. That is a solution, but I'm not going to talk about that now. I'm going.
Do the world a favor.
Indeed. I'm speechless here, and so because I'm speechless, I'm going to leave the speeches to next time. 423 Huff is the number to call if you got anything that you want to pass on to me about the streets, or if anything I've said interests you, in terms of anything you might want to do about what you've heard. And Uncle Dennis is going to be exposing all the conspiracies involved in the WikiLeaks scene.
No.
Perhaps not.
Just the comments of one of our longtime listeners.
Ah, yes. He's going to pass on in a free speech manner the contents, and hopefully do a blurb or two for Free Speech Radio News before it sinks into the sea. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadside. See you on Sunday, or talk to you on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning.
She starts to love her.